A never-ending stream of new gadgets made possible by emerging technologies has transformed our daily lives. For nearly every story celebrating the brave new world that science has brought, there are dire predictions of what can go wrong. From public health crises to killer robots, are all advances equally hazardous? Who is considering the potential harmful impacts of these new technologies as they're being developed? And to what extent do we all have the power and the need to take responsibility for new technologies, especially those that will transform human society and that can hurt or even kill? In his new book, A Dangerous Master, How to Keep Technology from Slipping Beyond Our Control, ethicist Wendell Wallach pulls together the confusing headlines to examine the science underneath the advances that are shaping our future. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Wendell Wallach to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us, sir. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Joe. Thank you for inviting me.
Consultant, ethicist, and scholar at Yale University's Interdisciplinary Center for Bioethics, and the new book is A Dangerous Master. The question that is that I mentioned in the introduction is, at what point does it slip out of our control? Do we still have good control at this point?
Well, I think we have fairly good control, but there are certainly things taking place that we really aren't giving attention to. So the question of control is just as technology and technological possibility become the primary determinant of humanity's future, or do we wrestle control back from technology to some degree?
We have always had new technological advances. Has this always been an issue?
Well, I think there have always been fears dating back to the Luddite Rebellion 200 years ago that technology would at least take more jobs than it would create, and certainly like nuclear power create a great deal of fear in many people. So in that sense, we're dealing with something quite similar to what's going on. But what truly differs this time around is that so many technologies are appearing simultaneously. I refer to it as a veritable tech storm of new technologies. So whereby a shower can be nurturing for plant life, a never-ending and incessant outpouring of new technologies demanding that we adapt and accommodate them, can actually be quite destructive.
And is part of the problem that we don't know what the impact or capabilities are of that emerging technology?
Well, that's always a problem, and people are always misguessing it. So you get a lot of hype and fear very early on in the development of any technologies. In spite of my rather dramatic title, I'm trying to be a bit of a good faith broker here. So I do acknowledge that there's some of the fears that we really don't know whether they have any basis or not at this time. But there are other things that we can perceive quite clearly seem to be serious issues that we're at an inflection point, but we may or may not be giving those some attention. So those are issues such as lethal autonomous robots and technological unemployment and dangers associated with the creation of new synthetic organisms. But do understand that all of these technologies also have tremendous benefits, and that's why they're being developed.
All right. So let's talk about some of the emerging technologies that we should be concerned about, which you just mentioned. Lethal autonomous robots are one of the technologies that worry you the most. What are they, and why should we be concerned?
Well, in one sense, they don't really exist, at least not in the form where they are intelligent agents being used in warfare to pick their own targets and dispatch people without humans in control. But crude lethal autonomous weapons can be built. In fact, weapons such as landmines and cruise missiles are, in one sense, lethal and autonomous. But the concern is that we are in an inflection point now where there might be some opportunity to arrest the development of this kind of weaponry, but that will be lost once they are fully entrenched. So that's one of the reasons why I push that as a campaign right now. My concern is that it will undermine robust command and control, that they might invite us into wars that we wouldn't be in otherwise, and perhaps more importantly, that machines should not be making life and death decisions about human beings. But the other concern about lethal autonomous weapons is they're really just the tip of the iceberg in terms of increasingly autonomous systems being introduced for all kinds of activity. And the broader or longer-term concerns are that these systems will slowly undermine the basic principle that there's a human who's responsible and potentially culpable and liable for the introduction of any new technology.
You just warned us as we began this strain of the conversation about how we should also be aware that they bring some good with them as well. So in describing what you just described, it seems difficult for me to see the good in that.
Well, the good, for example, in autonomous robots is you might lose less of your own troops if you put them on the battlefield. So there are always trade-offs, and that's one of the trade-offs that some people believe is so overpowering that it justifies going ahead. Many of those people believe we can maintain control of those devices, but I think that's the jury's certainly out on that particular one. But I think with nearly all technologies, there are these trade-offs, and in nearly all cases, they're being developed by good people who think that they will improve the human condition. So take something like atomic energy, which many people have been against, particularly with recent meltdowns at Fukushima. That's an example of a technology that people find quite fearful, but in fact it's caused much less deaths than coal does as a source of energy. And in fact it's a source of energy which is carbon clean, so nuclear power does not contribute to global climate change. So that's just an example of where you have a trade-off between the benefits and the risks. And, of course, those kinds of trade-offs come up in nearly every form of energy technology that you can imagine.
Wendell Wallach's new book is A Dangerous Master, How to Keep Technology from Slipping Beyond Our Control. You also write about increased longevity and how it plays into technological unemployment. And the point you make is it's more than just robots taking our jobs.
Right. Clearly, robots taking our jobs is the biggest issue in technological unemployment. Some analysts believe as much as 47% of U.S. jobs could be roboticized. But when you also think that people are living longer, right now roughly 2 to 3 years every decade, but there is movement out there for radical life extension, and if you have some of those breakthroughs, there might be suddenly a leap forward or 10 or 15 years in people's lifespan. Well, a lot of those people won't retire, and they won't open up jobs for young people moving into the workforce. On the other side, those who do retire will put a tremendous pressure on the Social Security and other forms of retirement that we have. So that's just one example of the way in which longevity creates a societal challenge.
And one of those societal challenges, I would think, would be just the capability and the quality, right? The quality control that we have of that we can somewhat control with humans.
Well, it's difficult. In some cases, you can actually ensure that you have a high quality output, particularly in manufacturing kinds of jobs that are predicated upon repetitive activity. And of course, not all human workers are reliable either. So in that sense, you know, it's a mixed bag. It really depends upon the jobs and it depends upon the humans. But yes, when you have good workers attending to their jobs, they can produce a better product, a more quality product than robots in most situations, particularly those when they're interacting with other people.
One of the other concerns that you write about and you spoke of a moment ago is the potential environmental impact of synthetic biology. Where are we when it comes to synthetic biology, and what are the concerns for the future?
Well, synthetic biology is truly a young science. We have for some time had the ability to manufacture some new biological materials or organisms. So we have synthetic control for diabetes and other conditions. But the concern out there is that we might introduce organisms that could totally upset biosystems. systems or organisms that were very destructive of an environment. So that is still somewhat in the future, but it has suddenly become of truly serious concern because recently there's a brand new method for editing genes known as CRISPR, and CRISPR eases the ability to create new biological material or new organisms, and it's a kind of technology that could rapidly move down into the do-it-yourself biology community. In fact, there have been warnings or a call for a moratorium recently to not use CRISPR to alter human genetic material. But immediately after that call was announced, China reported that it was already using the technique to work on a blood disease.
When we look at these technologies as a whole, as you do in the book, who's ultimately responsible? I mean, who's watching this and keeping control, so as the subtitle says, so they don't slip beyond our control?
Well, the troubling thing is that nobody is, or those who are have very little power to do anything. In a lesser example, when Stephen Hawking and Stuart Russell and Max Tegmark and Fred Wilczek called for attention to increasing autonomous robots and the danger they might pose in the Wall Street Journal, they asked, you would think with such benefits and harms that somebody would be watching out for this, but the fact is no one is. And I think that's the concern I'm trying to raise more broadly. It's not that there aren't academics or NGOs who try to raise red flags, but they're seldom heard, and at least the mantra in America is more and more productivity, and more productivity will create more jobs, even though that's not necessarily true, and therefore we cavalierly ignore some of the dangers. So the dangers are caught up with specific technologies, but what I'm also trying to bring attention to in this book is that it's this vast plethora of technologies coming at the same time, and as they come at the same time, they dilute the ability to keep an eye on all of them. So that's one of the big issues, this acceleration of technological development in a period when there's really lax oversight. So one of my primary goals in writing this book was to provide, if you like, a primer, an overview for citizens with basic scientific literacy that they would feel they would understand enough that they could jump into the debate. Because without significant citizen pressure, it's hard to see how all of these concerns will be attended to.
Do you think we can be a meaningful voice in that debate?
Oh, I think we already are a meaningful voice. I actually think citizen activism has become a more and more powerful force in America. So I do think that's a real possibility, but it takes citizens who are educated, who are not unduly dismissive of science for ideological reasons, but take the issues seriously and want to understand and want to participate. And it's hard to get that critical mass. So more recently in the Stop Killer Robot or Ban Killer Robot movement, there has been quite a bit of citizen support from around the world, and that's forced us to the attention of the UN's Committee on Certain Conventional Weapons, who are considering a ban, though it's not an easy technology to ban.
The name of the book is A Dangerous Master, How to Keep Technology from Slipping Beyond Our Control. The book is published by Basic Books. Wendell Wallach, thank you so much for spending time with us this morning. A great pleasure to speak with you. I thank you very much.
Thank you, Joe.
Thank you. Again, the title of the book, A Dangerous Master, How to Keep Technology from Slipping Beyond Our Control. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.